Well, one, I think women have always been part of the church. They've always, because as we believe as Christians that women are made in the image and likeness of God, like every human being is made in the image and likeness of God. So throughout every age, women, whether they have been in the scriptural world, people like Mary Magdalene, Mary the Mother of God, prophetic women like Elizabeth or like Huldah, which people may not know, or the women leaders who were part of Lydia or Phoebe, and right up through the time of the mystics, people like Hildegard of Bingen, Catherine of Siena, Julian of Norwich, Teresa of Avila, Sor Juana Inés de la Cruz. All of these are examples of women that have been part of the church. Yet maybe in the Middle Ages, their voices were silent due to the fact that women didn't have access to theological education as men had. A lot of their writings have not been as prominent in history as many of the world as the men are. But even in Vatican II, as many people may not even know, that 23 women were auditors at Vatican II. While they didn't have a vote, their voice could be lost. But a member of my own congregation, Sister Carmen McEnroy, who just died recently, was one of the first people to write a book called Guests in Their Own House, Women at Vatican II, to ensure that their presence at that important council was not lost. So while you can say that they were never excluded, they have always struggled to be heard.
There have been certain practices, you know, like things like churching after childbirth and the lack of ordination of women. And, you know, there's things that just seem to speak to the fact that there's something not quite right about women, even though, as you say at the beginning, they're made in the image and likeness of God. But just some of those things seem to suggest that there's something not quite right about women and their sexuality, or women and their theology even.
Yeah, I suppose people forget, you know, that the first witnesses to the resurrection were women. And, you know, with the bad image that Mary Magdalene would have got throughout the years before women who did biblical studies were able to raise up what her role really was. If I could go through every art museum in the world and take away these terrible images that project this woman who was such a prophetic figure, who was the one, the first person to really say that Jesus had risen. And when she went to tell the men, of course, they didn't want to know. Or indeed, it was the women who stood at the cross and were there while Jesus was killed and murdered. And they were the ones that stayed. So we're always been in those challenging spaces. Things like churching of women, which came out of a misinterpretation, or not so much a misinterpretation, but, you know, the book of Leviticus had laws, a book of laws in the biblical world. And I suppose in chapter 12 and in chapter 15, it talks about the flow of blood at childbirth or menstruation. And this was associated with blood being, you know, the powerful gift of life, and how this discharge suddenly came into these spaces of ritual cleanliness or whatever. Thankfully, though, due to the fact that women boycott these things and that women scholars have kind of brought a new lens to these things, this practice doesn't take place. So you were also referring to the practice of women's ordination, and, you know, a study way back by the Leadership Conference of the Religious Women in the United States noted that as long as women were not able to be ordained, and I quote from their document, that as long as jurisdiction, and that's the power to govern, is tied to ordination, a very limited number of the roles with authority will be open to women. The relationship of the jurisdiction to the ordination creates a glass ceiling, like it does across our world in any other sphere. So with this illustration, we can look at the exclusion of women from voting at the Bishop's Synod. And although Pope Francis opened the door for greater input by women in the synodal process, it's still only the ordained that may vote. So from 2016, the question of the ordination, ordaining women to the diaconate, would have reached a positive conclusion. Hopes were lifted again as the Amazon Synod repeatedly sounded the need for the recognisation and the promotion of leadership of women, and we haven't yet had the final conclusion of that. Even though I personally believe that the solution doesn't lie simply in the ordination of women into the present structures, the whole clerical, hierarchical structure itself needs to be reformed, and the sexist and patriarchal attitudes in both women and men need to be transformed. This is a challenge, particularly when observing male dominance is so ingrained. But I hope that the gift of the Spirit and wisdom will continue to empower us women and help us to break down these barriers that keep us from exercising our full God-given gifts in the Church.
It's interesting that you mention that the sort of sexist attitudes within women and men, it exists within both, in a way, this structure, because I suppose men may be in imposing it, but women also in accepting it. Some people have said, well, why don't women just walk away from the church? Why would they stay in this type of organisation?
Well, I think, you know, the truth is many women have walked away. That is a fact. But women find other ways. Women still gather as groups of women. Women still gather as groups of women in faith and continue to learn and study. It doesn't mean, because within the hierarchical, ecclesiastical world, just that women find ways of finding a voice. Many women in religious orders and in other kinds of communities create spaces where they can explore all of the critical questions of our day. While theologians in the past may have been silent, we still read their works. And if women... It's the same, like, particularly in an Irish society, because I'm an only girl in a family of five boys. And I grew up, my mother would be equally that the men had the power, the men knew better, the men know everything. And, you know, we might know. I mean, thankfully, over the years, her attitude has changed somewhat, listening to the like of me. But we do live in a world whereby, whether it is in academia, whether it is in literature, whether it is in art, whether it is in Irish history. We only recently have looked at the voices of women in our Irish history. We'll be seeing programmes on her story, her involvement in the War of Independence, her involvement in the 1916 Rising, her role in education, her role in medicine, her role in aviation. And these are like, and it's the same for us in the church. We never went away. We were always there. We are there. We won't be put down. Our voices will always find ways to find its expression. I firmly believe that.
Yeah, I mean, and so I suppose from the point of view of the future, what would be your hope and vision for the future? You mentioned that you think ordination is not enough. So what would you like to see change, and are you hopeful that that can happen?
I think structures have to change, but structural change is slow. As in any structure, you know, so hierarchical, patriarchal structures influence every piece of society, not only the church. But I do believe, you know, we have very good feminist scholars, biblical studies forged by women across the world. And today, because of access to the internet, people have access to these scholars and their works. So people like Maria Pilar Aquino, Elsa Tamés, Ivana Guevara, Mercia Abdeo Guya, Cúc Poclán, Elizabeth Schuchter Fiorenza, Barbara Reid, Elaine Wainwright, Elizabeth Johnson, Mary T. Malone, Tina Beattie, all across the domain, right across our world, are bringing out the attention for the equity for women. And they've also raised the need for our ecological lens to be part of that discussion. Something that has really given me hope is the Wisdom Commentary Series, which is a commentary series on every book of the Bible from a very diverse voices, with editors and authors and contributions reflecting a wide variety of different religious traditions, diverse ages, differing sexual identities, various cultural and racial and ethnic and social contexts. The first 16 volumes have been in print, and 7 have won the Catholic Press Association and the Association of Catholic Publishers Award. Such recognition ensures that the work of feminist scholars can be taken seriously and is used as a tool not only in academia, but with ecclesial leaders and pastoral ministries as well. Women have always been working in the church. They are the cornerstone. It doesn't matter what parish in Ireland you go to, you will always find the women there. It is vital for the next generation of women that they are mentored, encouraged to study and pursue advanced studies and theological education, and that it's made accessible to them. This means a commitment from bishops and priests that lay ecclesiastical ministry is funded and that they have financial backing to pursue their studies, but also to be paid in the positions that they're employed. I would hope that bishops and priests would also change their attitudes and respect the role of women ministers and leaders, so that together we can dismantle the sexism, clericalism throughout our diocese. One way forward would be not to exclude, not to segregate the men who study from the priesthood from the women who are studying theology or indeed other disciplines in universities or in diocesan cemeteries. There has been a noted rise in clericalism, and Pope Francis openly and repeatedly is critical of clericalism. He calls it an illness in the church, calling it the ugliest perversion, and the culture that enables abuse and insists on hiding it. It is critically important to include women authors in required readings for seminary courses and ensure that women professors are able to teach in these places and are part of the everyday curriculum. Women will always seek ways out of what seemingly can be hopeless situations, and they will continue to do so. I'm a Sister of Mercy, and we have a small program called Mercy Global Presence, whereby we are seeking to shape new words, new language, new spirituality, and new theology. It is across the Mercy Global world. This is an exploration over 2 years, done by all members of the Mercy family and anyone who seeks to channel God's mercy in our world at this time. The resources are freely available on the internet, and they're open to anybody who's interested. All they simply have to do is Google Mercy Global Presence. It's just one small attempt to continue to work for a more inclusive and equal church, which reflects all of God's diversity and all of God's beauty.